one of the things they ordered. I don't know whether I should tell you about it or I should surprise you with it. It's a gift for me, but it's not for you. It's not.
It's not plugged in.
Oh, man, that sucks. Well, let's see how long it takes for you to have your sound off, remember? I made you turn your sound off.
No, it's...
Wow, so...
It's YouTube. Boy, this is fail.
Tell me about it.
Two worlds colliding. 8-bit music and TV theme songs.
Predictability. The milkman, the paperboy, even TV.
Yeah. Some guy actually spent hours making this. And 285 people have viewed it on YouTube.
So we're number either 25 or 26. This is there for the Full House game, which I don't know exactly what the it'd have to something to do with Uncle Jesse, I'm sure. Because I don't know how you can build a game around Dave Coulier unless it's him and Alanis and her sucking him off in the movie theater. Boy, that's an old reference. So we were just talking about.
Who would have thought Bob Saget would be the biggest name to come out of that show?
Well, I mean, the interesting thing is that Bob Saget, I mean, it's always the thing that's pointed out as funny, is that Bob Saget's a really blue comedian, like, really blue.
Yeah.
And he plays, like, the most wholesome character.
Yeah, first time I heard his bits, you know, was he always? I guess he was always that way, yeah. Yeah, he's, if you've seen him on Entourage... Yeah, I mean, great in Roll's eyes because you know,
I've not seen him in Entourage. No. But he plays.
Blue,
I didn't roll my eyes. Just was like
he plays Blue Bob Saget on Entourage, and that was really the first time I was exposed to Bob Saget as Bob Saget. I'm like, man, he's playing a dick.
No, he's always been a blue comic. I mean, I remember the Aristocrats movie, and mm-hmm.
yeah.
So, I mean,
maybe that was the first time I saw him.
Yeah. So I mean, he's always been a very blue comic, very very dirty. Very, very strong.
And he got, a 7-year gig on primetime TV playing Danny Tanner.
Yeah, playing the most wholesome milquetoast character someone could possibly play. Anyway, we were talking before we recorded the show about, I forget why we got onto the subject, but it was something about how we think we're probably the oldest, the longest running craft beer podcast.
I mean, you know, the Good Beer Show was up before us, yes. But we just, out of curiosity, we checked. They haven't put up a show since 2010.
Yeah.
I know they had some changes, you know, changing careers and whatnot, but I thought they were still doing shows, but apparently not. And then, you know, Screwtops, obviously, the people that were... that egged me on to trying this because mm-hmm. they did a show like ours, but with fraught with errors.
Yes.
And there was a few other booze related ones, but none were really craft beer that I can think of. If you host one or if you know of one, please tell us. I don't want to pretend that we own some amazing title.
Well, I mean, I don't especially think it matters
if we, especially
much.
If we don't own it. But
I mean, especially, I mean, if people think we suck, it doesn't matter if we're the longest running. We're the longest running one that sucks. It's not like we get ad support or anything, right? I mean, we're only doing this out of, you know, because people listen, because we enjoy the fact, you know, that people listen to us and we enjoy doing it. It's
7.5 years, man.
Yeah. It's been a long time.
Cheers. We're going to get all sentimental, wishy-washy now.
We're not.
No, I think we're about done, but oh my God, 7.5 years. What? How many other things have we done? The same thing for 7.5 years.
Masturbated, probably.
Wow, that's going to rub you raw if you're going to do it for 7 years straight, man.
Well, you know, I took some time off in between. You know, it's like the show.
Okay, we're drinking Sam Adams Winter Lager.
Winter Lager.
Post show. It's a malt beverage brewed with spices.
Interesting they call it a malt beverage instead of a beer.
cinnamon, orange zest, and ginger.
That's probably an FDA thing, wouldn't you say?
Yeah. Yeah. No, but this has the same thing that the old Fezziwig has, spice-wise. It just, spice-wise, you know, it's
yeah,
ginger and stuff again.
This is a butterscotch chocolate. We're not going to bring you with a whole bunch of different sounds of us eating. Don't worry about it. It's just, there happens to be some chocolate here that I bought for last time. And figure a little bite or two isn't going to kill everything. So what else has been going on in the next... I've been buying a lot of gifts. I have bought gifts for me and gifts for other people right now. It's that time of year. Mm-hmm. But I bought myself a... I showed Jeff a Paperwhite, which is the new Kindle. Or it's one of the new Kindles. It's not a Kindle Fire. It's not color. Mm-hmm. But it's a sort of high-def e-ink Kindle with so black and white, but it has the whole screen is lighted.
Oh, okay. So you can read it in the dark.
Yeah, you can read it in the dark. And you can read it in, you know, deep sunlight. And there's no glare on the screen or anything like that. It's really good.
That's cool.
I'm enjoying it a lot. And I just showed Jeff that you can download ebooks from anywhere and just throw them on the thing. And
I didn't know that. See, I thought they had to go through the Amazon Universe. And I don't own an ebook reader because library books are free. However, an ebook reader makes it a lot more convenient to carry around books.
I took that to the restaurant. I took that to wherever it was. I forget the name.
Park Rouge.
And just, you know, read some of Game of Thrones while I was eating my waffles. And it was great.
That's cool.
Because, you know, it's weighs less than a paperback, and you can bring it anywhere. Mm-hmm. And carry hundreds of books if you wanted to.
We might have talked about this, but did you know that they've actually, researchers have found that a full Kindle weighs more than an empty Kindle?
That would make sense.
Well, I guess there's more electrons in full flash than an empty flash.
Yeah.
Not just in a different, you know, state or whatever. There's actually more electrons. So, yeah, a full Kindle weighs more. That's interesting. You don't think of the full computer memory making your device heavier.
Well, I don't know if they could actually weigh it, but they could probably theorize that it's true. Because I don't know if we have sensitive enough equipment to measure the difference between a full
and
empty.
I don't know if they weighed it or if they just calculated it. Let's see if I can find that without causing...
Yeah, but that it does make sense that... I mean, we talked about before in one of the other shows how if you try to actually contemplate Graham's number in your head would shrink into a black hole because it's too much information. Information actually, carries energy density, and energy density via Einstein's field equations and E equals MC squared, energy density is equal to mass. And so, and at a ridiculous convergent factor, but still, it's slightly weighing more. No, it makes sense.
Okay, so here we go. So the extra weight actually comes just from the device storing more energy. The researcher, whose name I can't pronounce, worked out the additional energy of 4 gigabytes of flash memory holds when it's full is 1.7 times 10 to the minus 5 joules, which translates to 1 to 10 to the minus 18th grams.
10 to the minus 18 grams.
So I guess they didn't measure it. So it's not 10, really as cool.
A 10 with 18 zeros. Times what?
It's like saying two electrons weigh more than one electron. Well, duh. You know?
Yeah.
But you're not going to measure it. But, I mean, it's neat, you know, just for people listening. It's neat to, you know, it's not just magic. There's extra stuff in there, you know, that makes the data be the data.
Well, I mean, the most important thing to realize about and consequence, I think, of special relativity and important thing to realize is that we think of a Newtonian world where we think of mass causing gravity, but it's not mass that causes gravity. It's energy that causes gravity. mass is sort of a form of condensed energy, but the point is that energy is what is a stress energy tensor. So energy is what twists space-time. Energy is what deforms space-time. And the fact that you can have a whole lot of energy in a small amount of mass makes it so that you can deform space-time a lot with a little bit of mass. But it's energy itself that does it.
I think I've had a little too much beer to really get into
okay.
theoretical physics tonight. I don't know. I've probably done it worse. Maybe that's it. Maybe I haven't had enough beer.
Yes, I think that's the problem.
To get into theoretical physics.
You're not willing to jump into the pool with both feet.
I think I was going to just propose a philosophical type question.
Like, well, do
oh,
it.
Oh, man, what if?
And, do it.
But I heard myself sound like a drunk hippie saying, oh, man, what if?
And, what if D-O-G really, or G-O-D really spelled
no, dumb. It was about, you're talking about, you know, energies. It's about energy stored up in mass, right? It's
no, it's not energy stored up in mass. It's that energy and mass are equivalent. Mm-hmm. It's just that there's a big energy density in a small amount of mass.
Right. If you
I just think the distinction is important. It's not energy being stored in mass. It's not a storage system. It's just right. that there's a large energy density in a small amount of mass.
I see. Okay. So it's just the way I stated that. Oh, man, what if? blah, 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 blah. Ding, I guess I should unplug that now.
You keep getting, you get a lot of emails or tweets or whatever.
I get a lot of emails. That was a warning from my alerting system at work saying that.
Everything's burning down. No, oh, my God.
The partition on the mail server is getting into the concerning range, but nothing I have to like fix right now. I'll fix it Monday morning.
You got a whole day ahead of you before you have to fix that.
Yeah.
Nice.
I mean, I could mute the emails from coming in every few hours, but then I may forget about it. So it's kind of like, oh, do I?
Mm.
If I mute the emails, then I got to make a note to follow up on it. So
no wonder you don't check your email. So I actually forwarded you an email that I got.
Oh, yes. Yeah, I saw that one. Yeah, we should run some Pints for Prostates ads.
Yeah. It's a guy from Pints for Prostates.
Rick Like.
What?
Rick Like.
Yeah. I think he's clearly a listener because he sent it to me.
Yeah, I was wondering how you got it. I've met him. I'm trying to think if you've met him or not. I mean, obviously we went to the Pints for Prostates in Denver. I can't recall if you met him specifically there or not. I met him elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember exactly where.
But yeah. He knows I'm going to check my email. He knows you're not. So,
well, maybe that's it.
Yeah.
Exactly. He knows, hey, Greg's better hit rate for that. Yeah, I think reply to him. Get the audio file. Or
you know, I sent it to you. I forwarded it to you. Did you listen to it yet?
I thought it was just him saying, hey, I didn't see there was an audio file.
No, there's an audio file in it. I have two issues with it.
Oh, okay.
And I'll bring it up on the, you know, I won't bring it up on the main show, but I'll bring it up on the pro show. One, I think it's kind of a lame ad.
Okay.
I mean, I don't, you know, whatever. It's for a good cause, so the lame ad part doesn't really bother me. But the second issue I have with it is it a good cause? And the reason why I asked that is not because I don't think screening for prostate cancer is a good thing, but because there was a recent study that came out that said that people overscan for prostate cancer and there are too many false positives, and that it's not necessarily a good thing to constantly test for it and to test everyone for it. So I'm...
Well, does he say everyone get tested or just people in the risk group? I mean, like, because, like, he's not asking for you and I to get scanned.
Well,
tested, is he?
He's saying, well, I mean, over 40. We're not quite there yet, but we're almost there.
New message. Time 2:23 a.m.
Hi. Sorry to be calling so late. I don't even know what time it is. I know it's been a while since I've seen you. I mean, wow. I don't even know how long it's been.
What?
It's my fault.
Yeah,
I know
it's
that.
Weird.
I should have made more of an effort. Anyway, I was at this event earlier and had a beer. Well,
it just stopped. Why'd it stop?
Maybe it's a buffering thing. I don't know. Oh.
Earlier and had a beer. Well,
that's not Rick's problem. That's Google's problem. Let me download. Oh, here we go. The whole thing caught up.
I know it's been a while since I've seen you. I mean, wow.
Wow.
I don't even know how long it's been.
Don't know how
long it's my
been.
Fault. I know that.
It's his fault.
I should have made more of an effort. Anyway, I was at this event earlier and
it sounds like
had
still
a beer.
Just the 26 seconds of it.
I was like, is he talking to his prostate? Is
dude. Okay. I don't know. That doesn't seem very effective.
Well, I'll play it.
Well, here, I can download it and play the whole thing. It was just the Google preview that, you know.
Yeah, like I said, it's lame. I mean, the first 40 seconds are this weird message to an answering machine that doesn't make sense, and then like the last 20 seconds is the actual part that.
Now I'm not getting the internet. What the hell?
All right. Just
anyway. I expected it to be just a halfway decent spot. I don't know. This whole rambling voicemail message thing.
Yeah, that was part of my problem with it. So let's see. Where are we? We're about here.
I know that. I should have made more of an effort.
Okay.
Anyway, I was at this event earlier and had a beer. Well, I had a couple beers and just really started thinking that I need to see you, you know? So just give me a call back when you get this message. This is Steve Riley. Schedule an appointment with Dr. Miller for a PSA test.
Come to an event. Have some beer. Learn that if you're over 40, routine PSA blood screenings are critical in the fight against prostate cancer. To learn more about the importance of early detection or to find an event near you, visit pintsforprostates.org. Pints for Prostates, reaching men through the universal language of beer.
It's wrong to make fun of people, you know, but it's so fun.
Sorry about that. I'll run the voiceover part, like twice,
mm-hmm.
once at the beginning, once at the end. I'm not going to run the rambling voicemail part.
Yeah, no, I think that's decent. Yeah. The rambling voicemail doesn't it's like, what the hell is this? Is he talking to his girlfriend?
Maybe that's
and
it.
The end,
maybe that's it. It gets people's attention. It's beer for, you know, say, hey, you guys are all beer people. I'm a beer person.
Mm-hmm.
I was diagnosed with prostate cancer.
Right.
I don't know. That works for me. It's a person like me.
But not some guy confessing to his doctor's answering machine that he needs to see him because he was drinking a couple of beers and said, I need to think about my prostate.
I mean, I think that's the hook. The hook for our listeners, Rick wants to get the word out.
Yeah.
You know, he wants to save lives. Who knows whether the economics of screening everyone is worth it, right? Because that's the thing you were talking about, whether it's worth it or not. It's the society, whether it's worth it to screen people.
Well, I think the problem with it was false positives, and the problem with it was that it was
they were undergoing procedures that were would not
unnecessary.
Yeah. Well, because they would not have died from prostate cancer.
Right.
They would have died from something else first. Right. There's two ways to look at it, right? Because you can look at it for what's cheapest for society, and you can look at it for what gives you personally the best chance of living the longest.
Right.
I mean, you can argue in pain and suffering, right? Because,
well, like, I mean, yet one thing you have to remember about tragedies like this is it's not just about you, it's also about the people around you. And so it's best to do what you can to avoid the suffering of people around you because that affects other people, affects everybody, that affects society. So you want to limit suffering. And if a little blood test or something every once in a while checks to see. But I would say if something comes up,
it's kind of
do the test again.
It's kind of fucked up where you could be like, oh yeah, you have cancer. But that's not what's going to kill you. Right? I mean, because that's kind of what it is. it proves positive, but you have a procedure to do whatever. But it was unnecessary because it would not have killed the person anyway. So basically, the doctor's going to tell you, oh yeah, you got prostate cancer. But odds are it's not going to kill you, so we're just going to let it go.
I guess. I mean...
It doesn't... It wouldn't kill most people.
The fact of the matter is, I think everybody will get... You know, if you live long enough, you'll get cancer of some kind. Most likely in the stomach. But it doesn't necessarily, mean it will multiply and it will turn into a cancerous thing that will attack your body. Sometimes those are just destroyed by your body's defenses. In fact, all the time they're destroyed by your body's defenses. So it's one of those things that's, you know, it's even though we hear about it a lot, it's still a relatively rare thing. But the older you get, mm-hmm. the better the chances are.
I think raising awareness is fine. I think we should do that on our podcast. And I think, like I said, I think the hook is, hey, this is Rick Like. How much is either Like or Lake? I'm not trying to say his last name. It's L-Y-K-E.
L-Y-K-E, probably Like.
Rick Like. And, you know, I've met him. But, you know, he is going to hit, you know, 2,000, 3,000 craft beer fans. I'm a guy like you. I got prostate cancer, you know. Not this making an appointment.
Yeah.
A drunk dial.
Yeah, seriously.
To the prostate doctor.
Hey, I haven't talked in a while. I miss you.
A drunk blah, blah, dial blah. To the prostate doctor.
You're awesome, man. I love you. I love you. Hey, can I get a prostate check?
So
that's why I was,
you know,
like,
actually I had a prostate exam.
Okay.
You got a second? Or do you want to pause first?
Yeah, pause for a second. I need to expunge.
My cursor's not going up there.
Oh, your problems. Computer problems.
Alright, so yeah, actually I had a doctor stick his finger up my butt before. There was I don't know how I found it. I was in the shower washing my rear end and, like, I don't know. Like, I felt like a bump back there. Like, mm-hmm. right? Like, actually, like, just inside my rectum, like, type thing.
Hemorrhoid.
That's what we thought it was, you know? But so I went to the doctor and way up in there! Checked everything else while he had to put the glove on, I guess. Mm-hmm. But yeah, he said, oh, probably just a hemorrhoid. So, yeah. I was kind of scared because I was like,
yeah, I felt a similar thing, and I looked it up, and they said, oh, yeah, a little bump like that, it's hemorrhoid. Yeah, all right. Nothing to worry about there.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's not a problem. I way back before, I had blood coming out of my stool, so I had to... So I went to the immediate one with the doctor
mm-hmm.
and actually got not just a finger, but a probe stuck up there.
A scope?
Yeah. And that was really weird because the reason why it's weird is because it gave you the feeling like you had to poop
because
it was pressing up against those nerves. So it was like really weird and you had to bend over and suck anything up. Everybody said it's just a hemorrhoid. So it, you know, I've
never had a colonoscopy. My dad's had a couple. He always complains because he has to, you know, take some evacuation type.
Yeah, my dad has done similar things. I mean, I guess once you hit like 60 or so, you should do that every year.
Yeah,
and you also apparently get kind of wiped out from it, so someone has to drive you back.
Yeah. Oh, I had an upper endoscopy, so they stuck. You've seen the pictures; they were laying out here. They stuck the same. Hopefully, not the same probe.
Well, as long as they sanitize it,
hopefully not the same probe they stick up people's butts. But they stuck the same kind of probe down my throat, and they knock you out when you do the upper one. Otherwise, you'd be choking on the thing. But it's a weird kind of sedation, right? Because it's almost like you don't remember it right away, but then it's kind of like deja vu. Like you get recollections of some of the stuff. Yeah, like I remember them. Like I remember when they were trying to get it to go down the esophagus in the back of my throat there, you know, and it is kind of a jamming rough type thing, you know, and a few other things just came back like deja vu. Like, so you're kind of there, even though you're sedated. when they do these.
It's not a complete sedation. You're not out like I was when I had surgery on my arm. I was out.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't conscious, but like they, you know, I think it was an IV. You know, there it was one of those things where like, okay, we're counting down from 10, 10, 9. You know, you don't get the 8 type thing. You're out right away.
Well, the thing is, I remember. Okay, so I remember they were looking at my arm. I had put. She thanked me for putting deodorant on because apparently some people don't. But she was shaving the area and shaving it because, you know, they need to shave it. And she was shaving it, and next thing I knew, I woke up. And so it was, you know, that whole, I don't even remember going back to 10-9. It was just, that was it. Okay. It was really weird. And I thought it was awesome. I thought it was like, wow, that was cool. I know some people who have, or apparent, you know, who have like been really shooken up by that they lost time and that they, you know, cried or something. And it, for me, it was just like, that's really cool.
I was groggy as shit when I woke up.
I mean, me too. But I clearly woke up, and like, I was just like,
I mean, after I woke up, there's huge chunks I still don't remember.
Yeah.
Like, I remember sitting in a wheelchair outside the hospital. And, like, that's, like, the only thing I remember from waking up. I remember a brief incident in the recovery room. I remember sitting in the wheelchair outside the hospital. And, like, the next day.
I remember waking up. And I remember being at home. And I guess I, you know, we drove home. And I sort of kind of remember that. You wake up, you're really groggy. You're just kind of like, you're completely out of it. But you recognize that you're conscious. But yeah, it's weird. But I wanted to point out something about what I'm playing with now, which are Legos. And I read an article about Legos, and you know, they have been able to maintain themselves as a very high profitable company without having a patent on what they do.
They have a trade secret, though.
Well, they don't have a trade secret.
They have a trade secret on the formula of their plastic. Mega Bloks cannot make plastic as good as Lego.
Right, so that
can they not, or do they choose to be cheaper? I don't know. I think they can't.
I think the thing is, and the important thing about it, and this is at least what the article stressed, was that there's very, very strict quality controls going on at Lego. Each Lego has, if you look under it, it has... 3 numbers in there. Three. So one of those numbers has to do with the mold it is. Another has to do with the position that it's in. And so whenever they get one that doesn't quite work right, they can go back to the mold and fix it or change it.
I think they polish them too. I mean, so all those Legos, Heather got some other Legos used, and they were mostly Legos, but there were some Mega Bloks mixed in and different kind of plastic, make a different tink. And the bottoms. These ones are so sharp, especially if you look at like the 2x, the 2x1s, so sharp, the little circular peg. Or if you look at the Mega Bloks, you can see it's the mold, it's rounded and stuff. So I think the Legos, when they come out, are bigger, and I think they polish every side. Because, I mean, these corners are too sharp for a mold.
Yeah.
So I think they polish them down, have some kind of laser cutter or something. Yeah, they're there's that, but then the plastic, the way the plastic grips on, it's better plastic than Mega Bloks uses. And I was wondering today, it's funny you brought this up. I was wondering today, can Mega Bloks not duplicate Lego plastic, or do they say, hey, this cheaper stuff's good enough? I'm wondering which it is.
I think it's the second one, because I think that because Legos are more expensive. And there are two reasons why. First, you're paying for a name. But secondly, you are paying for quality. And I really do... I mean, Lego has been able to maintain themselves strongly because they're associated with a high-quality product. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, they're constantly innovating their business. The whole Mindstorms And now what they're doing with different sets and making lots of cool things too.
Yeah, most of their money right now is in the sponsored, you know, the getting sponsors of movies and shows and stuff.
Yeah, they make video. They make Lego video games.
Yeah,
now.
That too. You know, I'm more of a. I just want the people and the bricks,
mm-hmm.
and maybe, you know, some wing shaped pieces and stuff like that. But I don't want, you know, the whole boat shaped piece or something like that. You know, like one of the pieces we got is like it's a 3-part boat, and like the whole bottom bow piece, stern piece is all one giant piece.
Yeah, there's something that feels more creative about just sort of doing it on your own, about mm-hmm. you know, coming up with your own idea. And I've told the story before about how I remember when I was a kid, we used to make spaceships because I was a nerd, still am.
Mm-hmm.
Used to make spaceships out of it, and when we were done with the spaceships, it was me and my friend Dan. We would take them, and we would find the best way to disassemble them was just throw them against the wall, because just the shock mm-hmm. just cause them all to just fall apart. So he'd make these intricate spaceships.
Yeah, they don't. I mean, Legos stick together well, but they don't if you're putting certain kinds of stresses on them. I mean, you've probably seen the MythBusters. They made the giant Lego ball, right?
Right. Yeah.
It rolled like 15 feet, and then it just broke in half, and then it just sheared away and just crumbled. You know. And they're not made for something that massive to hold together. Something,
you know,
that massive.
Part of the whole point of Legos is that they're not stuck. You know, that you can pull them apart easily, you know, to make change and stuff like that. So there's some static tension. There's some van der Waals. There's some van der Waals force that's keeping them attached, but mm-hmm. it's not an overcomeable amount. And that means that any strong shock or any strong, you know, stress will cause them to come apart.
So I got probably about 400 pieces of Mega Bloks upstairs, you know, from this thing Heather got. And I didn't realize there were Mega Bloks at first, so I started dumping them in with the Legos when I was, you know, sorting them and whatnot. And then I realized, hey, wait, oh, these are Legos. So I picked them all out, and I segregated them all. They seem to stick to Legos fairly well, but not quite as good as Legos stick to Legos.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to figure out, should I not be anal about this and just let them all play together because they're probably good enough, or should I keep them segregated, or should I get rid of the Mega Bloks? I'm trying to figure out what to do.
I would say keep them separate and use them if you need them, because mm-hmm. Legos just seem to work best with Legos, like you said. Mm-hmm. And even the Mega Bloks themselves don't stick to Mega Bloks as easy as Legos stick to Legos.
Yeah. Now, like, it seems like Mega Bloks have gotten at least these ones, and I haven't seen a kit quite like these. I mean, they're pretty close to the Legos. I mean, like I said, the tolerances are better than I've seen in the past. You know, the plastic's a little bit different. It's a little more flexible. It's improved, because what I used to see about Mega Bloks, they were very flimsy and thin plastic, and not a very good product.
Yeah. Or Duplos are the big Legos, right?
Duplos are the big Legos, yeah. And maybe that's where I got my thing from, because that's the Duplo-sized Mega Bloks are the ones where, like, the plastic isn't even always the same color. Like, I have two different colors. Well, we had those. I think we got rid of them. There was two different colors of yellow from the Mega Bloks. Like, they didn't even have the same blend of plastic on two different days, you know? I was like, come on, get it together.
What interests me is that apparently in the Maker, you know, those MakerBot things,
mm-hmm.
it's the same kind of plastic they use in Legos.
Oh, the stuff they use to print out the 3D mm-hmm. printing? I didn't know that.
So when you build something, it's made with the same type of plastic. I don't know if it's the same stress or the same quality, but it's the same type of material. So yeah, so when you make a 3D printer, it's basically building Lego plastic.
Yeah, I got. We talked about this. It was mostly a present for me, but I pawned it off on Allison. Like, so we got a Mindstorms kit last year. We've used it very little over this year, but you know, as soon as she can get into it, you know, I think it'll be pretty cool to get into the Mindstorms. I should pull that back out, and I don't know. It's hard because I don't think she I mean
she's still not at the level where she's able to.
Yeah, she doesn't have the patience.
Yeah.
Oh, I taught her checkers tonight.
Oh.
We're playing checkers, and she was into it. I didn't think she. I thought she played 1-2 games, not know what she was doing. We played like 6-7 games. She, well, Heather was helping her a little bit, but Heather's not a great checkers player. Mm-hmm. Like the previous games. Like, you know, really, you know, made bad moves. And then the last game of the night, she destroyed me.
Really?
I got into a series of, like, 4 turns in a row where I could not make a move without giving up a double jump. I've never got my ass kicked so bad in checkers, ever. I don't know what happened. It ended where I didn't have a move. I had a single piece left that was stuck up against the edge of the board and blocked in. So I couldn't move. I had one piece left, and she had 12
wow.
checkers on the board. I don't know how I screwed up so badly.
You got destroyed.
By a 4-year-old. Well, and her mom, who yeah. was playing really bad checkers before that game. So,
well, let me put it this way. It's not the case that a grandmaster in chess will beat a novice every time. It's not the case. There will be occasions where a grandmaster mm-hmm. will lose to a novice. Overall, a grandmaster is going to beat the novice
mm-hmm.
you know, 100 times to 1 or something like that. But there are going to be situations where grandmaster is not paying attention or novice is suddenly, you know, out of the blue, that
gets lucky, makes the, yeah. good move, makes the right move. I mm-hmm. mean, there's a probability of them making the right move, right? So
yeah,
but no, Allison was really into checkers. A little overzealous on what a legal jump is, you know, trying to jump over 2 pieces,
mm-hmm.
trying to jump in a straight line, you know, down the board. But you know, she's 4 years old, first time playing checkers, but she was into it, so I was pretty excited.
That's cool. It's a start.
We've been playing dominoes, you know, that's a. At least the rules that we're playing are super easy. I've never played dominoes, especially as an adult.
Not really, no.
I can't imagine the rules we play by is what adults play by, because generally the person who goes first wins, because you don't have to draw any tiles, because you have enough matches in your board. And every once in a while, you have to draw a tile and the other guy wins.
Honestly, I don't even know if I completely know how to play dominoes, because the only thing I've used them for is setting up situations where they all fall, you know.
So, I mean, dominoes, as far as I know, these are the real rules. So we're playing with a Dora version of dominoes, but I think if you get the numbers 1 through 6, it's the same deal. You know, person
you match a number to a number.
Person
right?
with the highest number double goes first. So if you have 2 6 double sixes, you go first. You put the double sixes down. When you put down a double number, you can play off 4 sides of the tile. You can play off the end, the long end, the short ends, and also off the sides.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have a normal domino, which is 2 different numbers, you can only play off the ends of it. So I should go get some dominoes we could play. But it would make horrible radio.
Yes.
But the rules were, there has to be other rules, because, like I said, when we play these games, the person who goes first wins 85 to 90% of the time, because you have enough, you have always have a match on your board,
uh-huh.
and it's the first person who goes out wins, so you don't have to draw pieces very often. And at the rare occasion you have to draw a piece, the other person wins, you know, so it's not a hard game. You know, as long as you, most 4-year-olds can look at the board and see if they have a match or not, mm-hmm. you know? I mean, it could get a little more complicated where if you're trying to anticipate and block the other person's moves. You know, when you play with a 4-year-old, you play with all your pieces up so they could actually see what your move might be. I think when adults play, they hide their pieces so you can't see. But there's got to be more rules to dominoes, because I can't see why any adult would play that game.
I don't know. I know that
there's almost no strategy. It's just like put your piece down where it fits until you're out, you know? Almost no strategy.
It's kind of sort of like Go Fish in that way, right?
Yeah,
It's the same sort of game. I wonder if they play competitive chutes and ladders.
It's just random chance. I mean, it's
I think it's a piece of chocolate in my water.
Got peanut butter in my chocolate. Got chocolate in my water. It's like, you know, Monopoly is just... How fast can you roll the dice, you know? You know, it's like...
No, it's not.
Well, most people buy the property is if they can afford it. You buy everything you can until you're out of money. There, how much strategy is there? Where's the strategy come into play? If you can afford it, buy it, you know? I mean...
Well, the strategy comes in if you play by the actual rules.
Okay.
Which are... If nobody, if you land on something, it's for sale. Right. And if you don't buy it, it goes for auction.
Oh, what?
Yeah.
I never saw that.
Yeah. Read the rules. And so immediately it goes up for auction and you start a bidding war with other people for that property. And so somebody could get it for like $20. And
I thought I did read the rules, but obviously yeah. I have not, unless you're lying to me.
No. That's the original rules to Monopoly.
Is it the current
Most
rules?
People don't play that.
Okay.
I mean, most people play it differently. I mean, like, for example, in the original rules for Monopoly, free parking is nothing. It's a blank space, whereas in modified rules, free parking gives you money.
Yeah, I mean... That's the main difference is whether... Like, some people play, like, all money collected in fees goes into free parking.
Right.
You know, and other people say only, you know, certain things go into free parking.
And there's, like, if you land on go, you get 400 as opposed to just 200
for passing. I've never seen that rule.
Yeah, there's a modified way which is that, you know, passing go gets you 200, but if you land on go, you get $400. Huh. But... Yeah, the ideal way, at least in the Monopoly rule way, in the rule book, is that if you land on a property and you don't buy it, it goes up for auction.
Okay, so there's some strategy.
Mm-hmm.
Huh.
What's because the then, of course, you're playing
the other person. Bid the just $5?
I'm not sure what it is. I have to read the rules. I'm not sure exactly what it is. But the point is, though, it's a little poker-like because you're playing the other player. Do you raise the bid because you want them to spend money on it?
Right, because they might have one or two of those and they want to start building.
But you know, you want. But if you raise your bid and they don't call you on it, then you have to buy that property that you don't actually need. So, yeah, there's...
There's that part about Monopoly where you can, you know, work out deals and trade properties. And stuff, right. That's so unlike almost any. Well, I haven't played any hardcore board games, but it's so unlike the Parker Brothers board games. Right. There's no making deals.
Yeah.
And trading and shit.
Sorry. Right. Yeah. There's nothing like that.
So I mean that was always interesting, but. Generally, you find, you know, mutually, you know, you're playing with three or four people, you get two people make a mutually exclusive deal, you know, they both build, screws the other two people, you
Yes,
know?
Yes. But there's also other things in the rules that are weird, like you can borrow money from the bank.
What?
Yeah.
I've never seen such rules.
Yeah.
Is there, I guess, interest or...
I don't know how it works because I never played by those
borrow
rules.
Borrow money from the bank.
You can borrow money from the bank. I don't know if there's a limit on how much. I imagine the limit is probably you can borrow as much as you have, right? Something along those lines. But I don't know when you have to pay it back. I don't know what the deal is. It's kind of crazy.
Yeah. You know, there's probably, I never even thought about this, but there's probably, like, well-thought-out, competitive, modified rules for a lot of games online.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because...
We know there is for Scrabble, right? I mean, there's competitive Scrabble rules, and there's Scrabble rules everybody plays right. by.
But, like, you know, you can't just take Chutes and Ladders and change the rules and be sure that they're fair, that they're competitive, right?
Right.
But there's probably, you know, gamers online who say... You know, here's some other rule sets for Monopoly that, you know, you have to take their word on it, but are fair, right? You can play this game, and no one's going to have a distinct advantage with these rules. It's just a different twist on the game. That'd be pretty cool to look into. Yeah, have you ever played any of those like adult hardcore board games? Like, what's the one with the hexagonal tiles?
I know what you mean. I forget what it is. Yeah, but no, I never have.
I always thought it would be neat to check out some of those, but
you have to have like four or five people who are into playing it in order to play it. You can't just play it with two people.
Yeah, and I don't have a... I know a few people that are those kind of gamers, but they're not close friends, you know. So, what was it? I can't think of the name of that right now.
Settlers of Catan, was that what it
was? That's it, Catan, yeah. Heather is not a board gamer.
Well, no, she's a board gamer.
she just, I don't know, she never did it in her family growing up. And like, because one of our holiday traditions, and now that we all have kids, maybe my sister and I have kids, there's no time for this, but, you know, after holiday dinner, Thanksgiving, Christmas, whatnot, we'd sit down and break out the board games and play. And, you know, we did, even after I was married to Heather, and Heather would kind of just observe. She never wanted to play. She was just too self-conscious about, you know, performing in these games, I guess. But, you know, now that we all have kids, there's no time for playing these board games. I don't know.
No, it's... We had board games. I don't know how often we played them, but enough that I remember playing them. But I think my favorite is still probably Trivial Pursuit, just because I have such a weird array of knowledge about stupid stuff that I'm actually pretty good at Trivial Pursuit. So
even the original question set?
The original question set is pretty broad and pretty out there.
I think I have
probably more and more. I probably am. I mean, some of this is like, you know, history for people who were around in the '70s, and so it's hard. Mm-hmm. But
pop culture,
in
the early '80s, you know, because I think I might have. I'm trying to think. Because my mom got Trivial Pursuit when it first came out. You know, I was too young to play, but they got it. They fell into the whole fad, you know, craze thing, and you know, they kept updating the question sets and whatnot. But she had the old game, and you know, 15 years later, it was quite out of date. I have a 20th anniversary Trivial Pursuit edition, which is out of date by now too. But I think I have the question boxes for the original one also.
Yeah, no, it would be interesting to check it out because, you know, I know more about the world now, but the world has changed considerably then. So, I mean, like,
a lot of that relevant stuff is no longer relevant.
Yeah, or no longer true.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, anything about the Soviet Union is, of course, not true if it's, you know, about the current Soviet Union or something like that. So there's no longer Czechoslovakia. You know, those sorts of things. There's been major sea changes. I mean, certain things, you know, that are part of history.
I hated the entertainment category in the older versions of Trivial Pursuit. My mom would kill it.
Yeah.
My mom would kill the entertainment category, and I knew nothing.
It was like, who's starting a Love Boat four times? Yeah.
I'd stick with the science and the history.
Yeah, yeah.
Trivial Pursuit's fun. Baldur Dash was a game I was always had fun with. That was one where one person draws a card with a strange word and writes down the definition. Everyone else playing writes down a fake definition, and you try to get people to think yours is the right one. You know, so the more people that guess yours, you get to move ahead in Baldur Dash.
Ah, I see.
And then if you guess the right one, you get a point also. So knowing the right one's helpful. Being able to write plausible sounding definitions is very helpful. It's a fun game. Especially when I started learning words like symbiotic in school, because I remember I had everyone guess on, like, I made up something. Let me see if I remembered. It was like a worm that had a symbiotic relationship with a groundhog, you know, was like the definition, right? And like everyone picked it because the word symbiotic was in there.
A worm?
I think that was the two animals. I can't remember that, but I remember killing it with the word symbiotic.
I played, you know, I talked about how I played Dora the Explorer. Or no, it was SpongeBob's.
Let me close the door. The timer must be off. The water softener cleaning session has just started. It's not supposed to start till late in the evening. early in the morning.
SpongeBob SquarePants Cranium I played with my niece.
Okay.
And that was it's a silly kind of game and but it was fun. I don't think there's an adult version of that game.
There is. There's regular Cranium.
Okay. But is that more for like teens or is that
adults can play it. It's a party game though. Yeah. I mean, there's four. It's probably similar to the SpongeBob one. There's four main things. There's the one where you model with clay, creative mm-hmm. cat. There's Star Performer, which I believe is charades. There's a drawing one, and there's one other kind of thing, right? And Clue Box, just the things you have to charade are adult things and not plankton, so. Or Krabby Patties. And
yeah. I remember Pictionary. I remember Pictionary a lot.
Pictionary. Remember, that there was a TV show, Win, Lose, or Draw was huge. The TV version of Pictionary. So then the board game version of the TV version of Pictionary came out, Win, Lose, or Draw. So we played that a lot. We had that game.
And now we do draw something. So how things have changed.
Well, that was, okay, they made a TV show of Pictionary called A Win, Lose, or Draw. And they made a board game of the TV show. It's just like how they made the board game of Words with Friends. It's like,
but
when, and then the marketing's like, now play Words with Friends for the first time in person.
Yeah, well, they call it Scrabble.
The bonus scores are different. Ah.
You remember the Scrabble TV show? The Scrabble
vaguely. Yeah. Yes. I remember never being able to figure out how the game worked, though, because it didn't work quite like Scrabble.
No, it was not like Scrabble. It was more like Lingo. It was more along those lines.
Or, I guess they gave you a word, and you had to figure out what the word was or something. Gave you the spaces.
Yeah.
And you had to figure out the word. So it's more like Wheel of Fortune.
Kinda. It was kind of a cross between Wheel of Fortune and I don't know, Joker's Wild. No whammies, big bucks.
Pressure luck, man.
Pressure luck,
how about that dude that knew the algorithm and could...
That's cool. That's cool. That guy's awesome.
Figuring out the time. I mean, that's just like trying to get the stars in Super Mario 3, right? You have to know when to jump. When you see the mushroom, jump. At the end of the mushroom, mm-hmm. jump, and then you'll get the star,
But you can make actual money on that.
Yeah.
I mean, what he did is he watched it, and this is a time when videotaping was pretty new, mm-hmm. and he memorized that there were he found that there were 8 different patterns in the ways that the lights moved around.
Oh, okay.
And so he recognized what pattern it was, and he knew where it was going to be, and he timed it right, and boom. And he won $150,000, something like that.
Because
there was nothing against that. There was no rules. It was not cheating because it was not against the rules.
Right.
They randomized it more after that. They made 64 or something like that, different things. So it was it's a lot harder to learn 64 than it is to learn 8.
Yeah. 8 patterns, huh? That's still impressive. Be able to figure out which of 8 patterns it is, unless, maybe there was enough variation it was easy to pick up on, but it still sounds, and the squares move fast, so you have to anticipate your reaction speed and whatnot. Yeah.
And apparently he near the end of it, he started getting a little bit not as good because he just got a little bit tired and harder to do, but he still managed to make a whole lot of money. But it's different than what Ken Jennings did, which is just knew a whole bunch of shit.
Well, I mean, also with Ken Jennings, it's kind of the opposite, right? He really learned the reaction time. He knew when the buzzers opened up, you know? Where you see some of those guys, they can't figure out when the buzzer opens up. They're pushing.
Is this the last syllable? Is that what it is?
Oh, I don't know. But is there a back-off delay? If you hit it too soon, do you get penalized?
Yes, I think there is.
Yeah, so, you see these guys really working their thumb.
Yeah.
Da 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 da. And they can't get in. Some people just can't get the. And then, Jennings is like, bing, 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 bing.
So, yeah, he had the timing right.
And, after 50 shows, the timing just becomes natural. You don't even have to think about it, I haven't watched Jeopardy in a long time. 7 p.m.
Last time I watched Jeopardy was when the computer was doing it.
Yeah, that's probably me too. I used to watch on a regular basis, but just with the kids and everything, it doesn't make sense to turn on the TV at 7.
And also, you know, it's like right after is Wheel of Fortune, so...
Before Wheel of Fortune here. Some markets it's after. Here it's before.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. After Jeopardy is Wheel of Fortune, so... Yeah. That was the old Dave Attell joke that you watch Jeopardy and you feel stupid because you don't know the answer, and then you watch Wheel of Fortune and feel stupid because you're watching it.
Yeah, I don't like that show. Screaming at the TV because you know the answer.
Yeah.
With no pressure and all the time. None of the lights.
Right, right. No, I'm sure if you're there on the set, it's a little bit harder because you're, you know, same thing with Jeopardy, but you know, same thing with all these shows is that in those conditions, you're not primed unless you're a performer.
Mm-hmm.
And you and I probably have better luck at it than other people because we have this show. We're used to performing.
My
to
knowledge
a certain
extent. Is not general enough to even make qualify for Jeopardy. You know,
No. But I mean, like for something like Wheel of Fortune or something, we might have a little bit more of a chance because we have more. It's like if I went up to give a speech to somebody, I'd be a lot more comfortable than I would maybe when we started the show.
Yeah, I think you're right. I haven't really spoken in front of a lot of people in the last 7.5 years, but. Yeah, I mean,
I know giving a presentation at work or something is not a problem at all.
Yeah, but those are usually peers that you trust, right? I mean, there's
I've known people who just nervous as hell giving a presentation, and that is not at all the way I feel. So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's hard to say what you'd be like in that situation until you're in it, but I definitely feel that.
Well, there's a way to test it, you know, like go to like a city council meeting or something and like go up and talk and see how nervous you are, you know, just to see.
I doubt I'd be really that nervous. I don't know, but
there might only be 6 people at the city council meeting too.
Yeah.
You say it's like, oh wow, 57. Let's wrap this up.
All right, we will see you. I think within the next. Well, I mean, you won't hear this until. At least Thursday, probably. But I think we're going to be doing the show on Thursday before Christmas in order to satisfy my schedule.
That works.
So,
all right. Thanks, everyone, for tuning in.
Have a good time.